Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Are you serious?
So it's Marcus Bronzy here from How to Kill an Hour. Thank you in advance for killing some time with us. On today's show, I'm going to be joined by Danny Brocklehurst, a gentleman who is very talented and has provided some great content for us television watchers over the years. I've definitely killed time many an hour watching television over the last few years. I'm not the first person to admit that on the show. He's, as well as co-creating Shameless, Danny has also won BAFTAs. Emmy award-winning screenwriter he is. He's also worked on some of the biggest dramas across the last few years, including Clocking Off, Talk to Me, The Stranger, and of course Brassic, which we're about to talk about on today's show, season 2 to be specific. I'm going to play a trailer for you, then we're going to have a chat.
The Famous Spy.
Six of us, Jim.
What, a famous six then? I'm alive. You need to get him back robbing again.
It's only 10k, not Friday.
My Friday.
Bye.
But I think we've established how long we've got.
We're professional thieves.
Ish. We're moving up a league here.
Jeez. Danny, that sounds action-packed, mate.
That trailer's just got a lot of explosions in it, hasn't it?
Perhaps it's fair to say, television. Yeah, definitely. I think it's fair to say there are a lot of explosions in the show. But yeah, thank you very much for bringing us season 2 of Brassic. But for starters, how would you describe it? When someone asks you what Brassic is like, what do you say?
Well, it's a fun comedy drama about a group of friends who are sort of in their 30s and have never left their little town in the north, and they've drifted. Some of them have drifted into a kind of quite petty crime, just as a way of making ends meet, really. But it's, you know, in the spirit of something like Shameless, or even to some degree, you know, something like Only Fools and Horses, it's about some guys who might be, you know, they might be slightly on the wrong side of the law, but they're very lovable characters, and it's a show about friendship and love, really.
Yeah, it is. And a bit of nicking as well. I like
bit of nicking. Yeah. bit of selling weed on the side.
Exactly, yeah. So during the show, we follow Vinny and his crew. What happens in season 2? What can you allude to us happening in season 2? Because season 1 is quite action-packed and it has quite a dramatic ending, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know, and anybody who hasn't seen it should catch up on season 1.
Definitely.
But just in case, it's it ends. Vinny gets into a lot of hot water, let's say, at the end of season 1, and for various reasons has to fake his own death to avoid this sort of, you know, this scary character. So we pick up on that in season 2. It's several months later. Vinny has been living pretty much self-isolating, actually, in a weed shed. And he's not really been, you know, he's not really been doing what he normally does. He's not been seeing the lads. And then the guys want to open a club, need some money, and they have to get Vinny back out working with them again, and without that we kind of launch into season 2 from there. And it's, you know, it's very much in the tone of the first series, but I did want to be slightly more ambitious and just to push it a little bit further second time around.
I think you definitely, I mean, I've been lucky enough to watch a few episodes in season two, and I feel like you definitely did manage to take it to the next level. One thing I felt after watching the first season was, this is great. And to be fair, the way you wrote this, it wrapped itself up quite neatly and it had a cliffhanger where it could go somewhere. But I thought, you know what, this is perfect as it is. And my concern when you kind of have a second season of something like this is, how do you kind of continue the energy, or how do you come back bigger and better and badder? And I feel like you've really done that. But there's also some truth.
No, honestly,
you have. But there's also some truth behind the characters when you've that you've written into this show, right? And that's kind of where Joe plays into the production of Brassic, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, you know, this was this whole show was Joe's initial idea. He had some of these characters and some ideas for stories that were from his past and, you know, and really funny stuff. But also, he puts so much of himself into the show. He puts his own bipolar and mental health issues into the show. And in series two, you probably haven't got this far yet because it's deep into the series, but the stuff to do with his father, who is an alcoholic that we deal with. You know, I mean, it's a fun show and there's a lot of funny things happening, but it is a comedy drama. And at times, particularly as we get deep into the series, there are more sort of poignant emotional moments. And I think Joe always pushes that. He always wants us to go to a place that feels emotionally truthful. And he gives a lot of himself in his own life, sometimes too much, I think. But, you know, he really lays himself bare.
Yeah, that definitely comes across. And I believe during the writing process, when I've been reading around this, is Joe actually tried to, he's very dyslexic, I can relate to that, tried to actually, you know, write some coherent stories for the first series. But he kind of, he says he handed you like a book, which is, you know, papers with post-it notes and stuff stuck to it. What was the process like taking, you know, the ramblings of a gentleman who self-confessed isn't a good writer? How was it like taking that and actually making it into something that has a really nice story arc? It's got great interwoven characters who even some of the characters that we see quickly on screen for a few moments, the lines that they have really punched through. How was that process?
It was a great process because, you know, normally when I'm creating a TV show, I'm creating it from scratch on my own. Yeah. And that is quite heavy lifting. So it was brilliant to have a kind of partner in crime. And also Joe, you know, I think because Joe had thought about this show for so many years and had sort of jotted things down and had these like funny characters and funny ideas. I mean, he would be the first to admit it wasn't a fully formed thing. You know, it was a rough diamond and it needed me to come along and shape it and help him turn it into a TV show. But undoubtedly, the kind of raw material that Joe had was amazing. And it made it so much more fun to collaborate with him and to bring this thing to life. And, you know, I think at its most truthful moments, that's because that's the place it comes from. It comes from real life to some degree.
Yeah. And you're somebody who is from the northwest of England, right? And the show is based there as well. How important was that kind of heritage of yours when you're kind of exploring the areas like Chorley and Lancashire?
Yeah, I think it would have been difficult to do this show if you didn't sort of know the areas that we're setting it in. You know, I mean, me and Joe are both, you know, northern lads, and we know this area pretty well. But I think more important than that perhaps is that we both saw the show the same way, and we both have the same kind of sense of humor and the same, you know, aspirations for it. And you know, it's a particular tone, Brassic. It's not something that every show does. You know, we're quite sort of raucously funny at times. We're sometimes, you know, sometimes very silly. But then also there's this other thing going on where, you know, we're dealing with some quite big themes, and series one did that, and series two, as it goes on, does it as well. You know, so you are kind of having to walk a delicate tightrope sometimes between really quite big laughs and sort of silly things and fun, and then, you know, a story about alcoholism or about mental health or whatever it be. You know,
yeah. I mean, how do you approach that? As a writer, because somebody, you know, you've done something like The Stranger, which is a, you know, definitely not comedy. Is it fair enough to say that, right?
I think that's fair enough.
Fair enough to say. So when you're writing stuff that's funny and you've got scenes backed up against, like you said, they're really big, serious issues, how do you get into that? How do you get around that and negotiate in and out of that in a way that doesn't feel like you're just slapping it together? Because it's quite smooth when you watch the show.
Yeah, you have to do it carefully. It's not something that a lot of shows feel comfortable with. But I've got to say, for me, it's always been my favourite tone. You know, I grew up watching things like Auf Wiedersehen, Pet, or, you know, Minder, or whatever it was, you know, which I think, you know, if you look back on particularly Auf Wiedersehen, Pet, it was a funny show, but at its heart, it did have this really important stuff going on, you know, about Thatcher's Britain, about unemployment, about loneliness, and, you know, it's a tone that I've always felt very comfortable with. So I've done it in quite a few shows now where, you know, be it Shameless, or be it Sorted, a show I did years ago, or, you know, whatever, even Ordinary Lies to some degree. I don't mind mixing comedy and drama, and I find that the audience respond really, really nicely to it if you get it right, you know.
Yeah, they definitely go hand in hand when they're written well. I mean, sometimes I feel like it just doesn't connect with me, but there's something about watching Brassic. When I went to watch the first episode, I really wasn't sure how it was going to come across, because you can kind of watch trailers and read about things and they kind of are a different experience. But you kind of do in each episode, there's laughs in there, you know, there's funny old local men at the pub doing, you know, random things, you know, in scenes like, you know, urinating or whatever, and then you'll have like a really serious plot line running literally right next to it, and it doesn't feel like you're making one seem silly when it shouldn't be, or you're making the silly thing seem serious when you shouldn't be. So yeah, that's really, really cool. I mean, with Brassic season two, I think for those who haven't watched it before, how would you describe the filming style? I know you were more on the writing side of things, but how would you describe the filming style?
So the filming style is very, very, very unusual for a comedy. And this is something that we did on purpose, because it's shot. I mean, first of all, there's a reasonably decent budget, which is rare in comedy, you know, in comedies and comedy dramas, because they're usually done a little bit cheaper than dramas. So we've got a pretty good budget. We shoot it in a style that is made to look like film. It's got a tiny little bit of CinemaScope at the top and bottom of the screen, so it's kind of in that letterbox style. So we also film on very special cameras to give a great depth to what's going on, because we're shooting in these amazing locations up in the hills of the Northwest, and, you know, it's got a little bit of the sort of Wild West about it up there. You know, it can be really quite wild, and so we wanted it to look a certain way, and there was a lot of chat before we actually made season one about the way, funnily enough, that the Coen brothers film their films. And it's about not shooting all the time in close-ups on people's faces. So you have a lot of people in shot, you have a sort of an epic quality to the way things are framed. And it does feel different. It's a very strange thing. The audience wouldn't necessarily consciously know it, but it does feel different. And it's very colourful as well. It's very bright, you know, to give a warmth to the show. So we spent a lot of time working on the way it would look. And therefore it does feel different to the way other comedy dramas feel.
Yeah, it does definitely look lovely and bright and colourful in certain scenes, which is nice, because I'm always used to seeing the UK looking grey. You know, they've got desaturated image. I'm like, come on, no, we have got colour over here, guys. It's not just like, you know, in America. when you say you use special cameras, what kind of special cameras did you use?
You know, you're asking the wrong man here. I can't remember the name of them, but I know that... what had happened is I'd done a show called Safe for Netflix, and we'd use these cameras that just have this amazing depth to them. And it was the same director who did Safe that came to do the first block of Brassic. And we talked about using these cameras again. And you know, we spoke to Sky, and Sky agreed that it would be a good way to go. So I honestly can't remember what they're called now, but they are really, really good cameras. And you have to shoot in a certain way on them, you know, to maximize the way that they're going to look. And a lot of, if you look at a lot of comedy on television, it is shot in quite a boring way, you know, and that's fine, yeah, because sometimes you're just relying on brilliant performances, you know, brilliant actors, and that's good enough, you know. But if you look at some comedies that have been very successful, they are quite boringly shot.
Yeah. Yeah, and Brassic definitely isn't. It's definitely got some awesome shots in there. And yeah, like there's a few, and this isn't going to spoil it, I think there's a few scenes where you're just, like you said, you don't always shoot like how people would presume you would. So there's some nice wide shots where you just see like sunlight kind of coming into the camera, and you know, solar flares and stuff. And it's nice to just have a still shot in there that looks really, really good. So onto something that is probably a bit more of your forte. Right. We're going to do a little bit of future gazing here now, Danny. So, you know, we're all in lockdown across the world. It's no secret. How do you think this is going to change the way people consume the stuff that you write?
Oh, my word. There's a question. I don't know. I mean, you know, I think at the minute, people are looking for lighter, more diverting material. So I'm really glad that at the minute I haven't got a very, very grim, heavy, depressing drama going out.
Because yeah, good timing.
That would be wrong. That would be, yeah. So it's good that I've got a show going out that's kind of fun and life affirming. You know, moving forward, it's really hard to tell. I mean, it sort of depends how the world changes, really. And you know, I mean, I think when eventually we are allowed to go out again, you know, I wonder whether people will want to watch television at all, because they'll be so sick of being in their house that they just want to go to the pub. But it's a really difficult one. You know, I was just looking at a script that somebody else had written for Brassic 3. I don't write them all. And there were some references in it to, you know, to face masks and PPE and this kind of stuff. And I was like, oh, that seems so weird. I don't know. Will we be talking about that stuff in a year or not? I don't know. I guess we will, but it's really hard to, it's just hard to know, isn't it?
Looking forward
a few months.
Yeah, it is. Cause I've just, the reason I asked you the question is because so much of what we're consuming is obviously at home. So when you're writing, I was wondering how much of the process is you kind of thinking, right, okay, where's my viewer watching this from? Do you know what I mean? Cause it's definitely not going to be anywhere other than, you know, a TV screen or a
yeah, I mean, the weird thing about television, it all takes so long to make. So even stuff that I'm writing now, you know, even if we could film it, even if we could start filming tomorrow, which we very much can't, it wouldn't be on a TV screen for a year anyway, you know, because everything takes so damn long to make. So it is weird under these circumstances to know, you know, when the things we're writing now, what should we put in? You know, I mean, I've written shows where I've referenced Brexit, but will we, you know, will we need to sort of be saying, oh, well, when the pandemic was on, you know, such and such? I don't know. Maybe we will. Yeah. I mean, it's such a massive thing. We can't really ignore it.
Yeah, yeah. It will be very interesting to see. And did I hear you mention in season 3 as well then, Danny, already?
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, okay,
yeah, it's I've got to really take my hat off to Sky. They have been so amazing on this. You know, they commissioned the second series before the first had gone out. They commissioned the third series before the second's gone out. I mean, this is unheard of, really. It's very unusual. Well, it's not unheard of, but it's rare. It's rare, you know, and it shows a real confidence in the show. And you know, I applaud them for that.
Definitely. I mean, you know, yeah, well, rightly so. And you know, applaud yourself as well. I mean, it just goes to show that what you're putting out there is there's great demand and great confidence in it. But what I was kind of angling for was season 3. I mean, season two has not even been watched by the majority of the people that are listening to this now. But I mean, what can you give us at the moment? What can you tell us? Be honest if you can't.
Well, I mean, we're still writing it. You know, it's kind of early days, but I mean, it's difficult to talk about season three when series two is not even on the screens yet. I think all I can say is, you know, for me, I don't ever want to tread water with shows. You know, you see things come back year after year and they're kind of the same, you know, they're just kind of the same thing. And that's fine. People like familiarity. But I think you've got to keep moving it on. And it's a bit like for musicians, you know, when they do the next album, people do want the same, but they also want you to move it on a little bit as well. And, you know, that's they talk about the difficult third album or the difficult second album? I guess they're all
second
difficult.
Album, yeah.
But well, we're on the difficult third season now.
You breeze through the second, you're fine.
Yeah, so I think it's we've sort of moved it on a little bit again, but you know, you've got to keep moving on, but take the audience with you.
Definitely. And I think our audience will definitely enjoy season two of Brassic. And like we said at the start, if you haven't seen the first season, you're in for a treat. Get those episodes in your system and then, crack on watching the rest on Sky. How about you? During lockdown, how have you been spending your time? I mean, writing doesn't need an office. I don't know how you used to write before, but how's that affected things?
Yeah, it's a strange one, really. I mean, in lots of ways, things aren't that different for me because I still sit on my own all day writing, you know, pretend people. I mean, it's unusual because my kids are around, so that's, you know, there's a little bit of a nice distraction to have the kids around more. A writer's life is quite isolated anyway. So you know, I'm probably better prepared for being on my own, you know, locked in than a lot of people. But having said that, you know, what was great prior to all this is that then I could, at the end of the working day, I could then go out and see people and go to the pub or go to the gym or whatever, you know, whereas now you can't do that. So, yeah, it's similar in the daytime. But then, obviously, you know, I feel a lot more locked in of an evening.
Fair enough. And how are you killing your time when you're not writing at home then, Danny?
I've got two kids. That's I have to
say no more.
I have to make sure they're exercising and doing all kinds of, you know, other things. Or watching other people's TV programs.
Yeah, fair enough. How old are the kids?
They are 12 and 7.
So, oh, yeah. Okay, cool. So the 12-year-old probably can do a little bit more by themselves, but the 7-year-old, I feel you're going to be hearing dad quite a lot.
Yeah. I know. I'm amazed I've managed to do this this chat without somebody shouting me, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, the great thing is that's kind of become the norm now. So if you're having a chat and somebody's I was on Zoom the other day and somebody's kid walked in the room and said, "Mom, can you wipe my bum bum, please?" And they were like, "Yeah, I've got to go." And I was like, "Yeah, you got to go and wipe the bum bum. It's cool. We're used to it now." So that's an interesting thing that's kind of come up now. But no, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us, Danny. I really appreciate
you
letting us know all about what happens in Brassic season two, and also letting us know that there's a season three coming as well. I had no idea. That's a great thing to hear. Make sure you grab all the episodes. They're out on Sky now, I think, by the time this episode's out. So yeah, make sure you have a watch. And yeah, like I said, I appreciate you coming on the show. Where can we find you online, Danny? Where should we look out for your musings and your social media posts?
Oh, you know, I'm on Twitter, but I don't, you know, it's mainly just blatant self-promotion of the TV shows and things like that. Yes, I'm ranting about Donald Trump. You know, that's pretty much my Twitter output.
So you are basically the majority of Twitter self
self-promotion and ranting about politics. Pretty much, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much for coming on How to Kill It Now. We'll make sure we put links to the show in the description. I hope you have a great time, man. And I look forward to talking to you about season 3 and 4 of Brassic.
Awesome. Thanks for having us on.
Hey,
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.